I'm Mo.
I'm Chip.
And I'm Mikey.
And we're the hosts of the Deep Dark Truth podcast.
An allegedly hilarious podcast that investigates bizarre true crimes, conspiracies, mysteries, and the cryptid dating scene.
Because local cryptids want to meet you.
Call me Bigfoot, 313-355-3411.
Find us wherever you listen to podcasts.
Don't forget to rate and review this podcast.
And keep searching for the deep, dark truth.
I hate when you guys do that.
This episode is brought to you by the Slash and Cast Podcast Network. Learn more at slashandcast.net.
Welcome back to Reverie True Crime. I'm your host, Paige, and today's episode is a paranormal one. Back in 2011, the Ammons family claimed there were demons in their new home. In the end, Zach Bagans bought the home and ended up demolishing it. So, let's get into what was going on in this so-called demon house. It all started on November 11th, 2011, when Latoya Ammons, her three children, who were 7, 9, and 12, and her mother, Rosa Campbell, moved into a house at 3860 Carolina Street in Gary, Indiana. That December, they said there were black flies surrounding their porch. The flies would go away, but they would always come back, even when Latoya thought she had killed all of them. Latoya's mother, Rosa, started to hear what sounded like someone walking around in the basement. Even the doors were making a squeaking sound all of the time. Rosa saw a shadow man pacing back and forth in the living room and claims she also found dirty shoe prints on the porch every morning. She also said an entity that she could not see would start choking her. Latoya's 12-year-old little girl allegedly levitated off of her bed while she was unaware and out cold. She even had a friend over who was staying the night. Everyone said that they were saying prayers over the 12-year-old until she came down and back onto the bed. A claim was made by the family that Latoya's 9-year-old son was violently tossed across the room by something no one could see. The 7-year-old son was said to have rolled his eyes in the back of his head while he was growling, saying things like, "It's time to die," and "I will kill you." The Ammons family said they saw a demonic form that would appear in different shapes, like a black monster, or an old woman with shiny red eyes who wore a hood. The house would seep a clear, odorless oil, and the children would all go into convulsions randomly and chanted, quote, satanic verses. Rosa would go into the kitchen, hearing the barks and howls of dogs, but they didn't have any pets, and there were no animals around that she knew of. She started to look around and saw a shadow of someone moving around. Rosa started to warn her daughter that no one would ever believe them. On April 19th, 2012, the family was terrified and got in touch with their physician, Dr. Jeffrey, and asked him to come to the house. About the visit, he said that the behavior that the family showed was quite delusional. The police were called by someone at Dr. Jeffrey's office, and after the police got there, the kids were transferred to the hospital. The 9-year-old son was said to be acting sensibly, but the 7-year-old was said to be yelling and flailing around. The physician was doubting the accusations that were made by the Ammons family. He said he never saw anything paranormal at the home. According to his medical notes, he said that there were delusions of ghosts in the home and hallucinations. Latoya's children would miss school often. There was even a complaint filed against Latoya in 2009. By 2012, she said the reason why her kids were missing school so much was because of the demons that haunted her home and all of the activity. That same year, someone called the Department of Child Services to check on the welfare of Latoya's children. The DCS workers thought for sure that the children were putting on a huge act to get attention from their mother. However, there was one person that worked for the DPS who claimed that she saw the 7-year-old little boy walking up the wall backwards. All of LaToya's children were evaluated by psychologists. Many of them said the children were acting deceptively and in accordance with the mother's beliefs. One of the psychologists, Tracy Wright, said the 7-year-old would play as if he were possessed whenever he was confronted or felt backed into a corner. During one incident, the Ammons family had to rush the 9-year-old to the emergency room as he was quote-unquote possessed. When they got to the hospital, it was said that he walked up the wall, flipped backwards, and threw his mother into the wall. The child started to headbutt her. The staff had to grab the 9-year-old and hold him down. The psych ward doctor, who was called in, said it wasn't real, it wasn't human. He said no human can do what that little boy did. Charles Austin, a police captain, at the time 37 years old, reported that he truly believed there was definitely paranormal action happening in the home. He was a skeptic who went into the home thinking this was nothing but a fake claim, but he came out a believer after he said he felt that his life was in danger. There was a picture in the Indianapolis Star. It shows an eerie shadow figure in the window. This picture was taken when no one else was in the home. Captain Austin said in 2014 that he was skeptical. He was leading the pack through the house. He said that when they walked in, the first thing they saw in the living room was a candle burning and a Bible and a little altar with a crucifix. It was the same in every room in the house. He said there was a drawing on the refrigerator done by one of the boys that was Jesus on the cross, but behind him there looked like demonic figures. Captain Austin went on to say that underneath the stairs was dirt and a candle. He said he was trying to figure out what was going on there because the rest of the basement was cement. He took pictures of the candles and the crucifix under the stairs on the dirt. These pictures that he took on his iPhone later vanished, and he said that the same phone never worked the same again. Captain Austin said the pictures showed figures he didn't see with his bare eyes, and that they were lurking around him and under the stairs. On one visit to the home, Samantha Illick, one of the DPS workers, touched a cabinet oozing a clear oil. Her finger turned white, like a blister after a burn, and she vowed never to return. A picture of this is shown on the Daily Mail. Captain Austin said, quote, "She touched it with her pinky, and her finger just went flush free of blood. It was white like it was dead. She was holding up her hand saying her finger was numb and the side of her hand," end quote. Joe Nickel, an investigator that isn't sold on paranormal activity being a real occurrence, said that Charles Austin was an admitted believer in the supernatural, including ghosts. Joe said that the picture in the Indianapolis Star had a caption that said it was a photo by the Hammond police. He went on record to say that the picture was not taken by the Hammond police. Joe sat down with many witnesses, and he believed there were quite a few answers that were not otherworldly that explained the alleged paranormal and demonic activity. LaToya claimed that a few police thought the home was a portal to hell. When the activity in the house was being reported in 2012, it seemed the majority of the police, doctors, nurses, paramedics, and social workers did not really want to get involved or speak too much about it. However, afterwards, some of the ones that were connected to the case said they were assaulted by demons. They were scared, and they believed the whole family was possessed by something or things that were forces of evil. Captain Austin said when he left the house, he was aggravated, and he said, "Enough of this garbage." He was having a hard time believing what he was going through. He drove off to a gas station and made a phone call. He had his police radio on. He said there was a loud growl coming from the AM/FM radio that yelled, "You, out of here." Then there was a lot of garbled sounds and static. He said after that, all of the officers who had been with him that day had issues with their radios, phones, and even alarms on their houses. 2 weeks later, something startling happened to Captain Austin. When he pulled up into his driveway, the electric door to his garage would not open. It was working fine before. He said he kept pressing the keypad until he finally gave up. He got out of his SUV to flip the main power in the garage, but it didn't work. He walked back to his vehicle. His driver's seat was moving forwards and backwards repeatedly on its own. He took the SUV to get it looked at, and the worker said if he had not brought it in, it could have eventually caused an accident, and it could have gotten the captain killed. For some strange reason, the seat was on the verge of collapsing. LaToya and her family were still feeling plagued by whatever it was in the house. She said that she and her family almost lost their lives there. They finally called on Father Michael Magonot to perform an exorcism. Father Michael was the emergency room chaplain on the weekends, and he met the family when he heard about what happened. He said, quote, "We were having our Bible study after Mass when I got the call saying, 'You're a Catholic priest. You do exorcisms. We need you to do one.'" They went on to tell Father Michael that the little boy had just walked and glided backwards up a wall and flipped over to land on his feet. Father Magonot said, quote, "They said he was growling. They described all sorts of things. I went, of course." He came into the situation actually trying to disprove their story. On April 22, 2012, Father Magonot sat down to ask the family questions to try to assess what was really going on. After they talked for over 2 hours, he came to the conclusion that LaToya and her family were indeed being tormented by demons. An exorcism was thought to be the best thing to do. Before an exorcism is performed, a bishop has to allow it. Father Magonot was apprehensive about asking the bishop because he had already contacted him a few years earlier about another instance about supernatural occurrences, and the bishop blew him off. Father Magonot said, quote, "I set out to disprove it because, to be honest, I didn't want to get the bishop involved. But I had policemen, social workers, doctors, and security guards telling me what they had witnessed. I couldn't just dismiss them all. That was a Friday, so I met with the mother and the grandmother on that Sunday." This is the letter that he sent to the bishop. The letter is titled "Report Seeking Permission of Bishop for Exorcism." It reads, "On Friday morning, April 20th, 2012, in the midst of my weekly Bible study group, I received a call from Chaplain David Neville of Methodist Hospital, since I was on call for Father Joseph Yuko, to come to the North Campus to perform an exorcism on a boy witnessed by many as walking backwards up a wall. I told him that I would need the bishop's permission to do so, but that I was willing to conduct the necessary investigation. I gave him permission to pass on my contact information to anyone interested in being involved. I arranged to meet with the mother and grandmother at the home they rented to bless it and investigate that Sunday evening, April 22nd, at 6:30 p.m. Following Friday's incident, Child Protective Services became involved and two of the three children were placed in foster care with the Carmelite Sisters in East Chicago, and the youngest boy was undergoing a psychological evaluation at another facility in Wheatfield, Indiana. After I blessed the home, I interviewed the mother, LaToya Ammons, and her mother, Rosa, who live with them. The first time they noticed anything strange was shortly after moving into the house last November 2011. After midnight, they would hear footsteps walking up the stairs from the basement and open the door into the kitchen. But when they would come out of their bedrooms, they would see nothing, except perhaps when they would turn on the light in the room. It would flicker, making a crackling sound for a time and then stop. When this continued, they later would leave their bedroom doors open to see if they could notice anything further. And one night after 3 a.m, the grandmother was awakened to see a shadowy figure of a man pace back and forth in the living room. And when they got up the next morning, they saw on the wooden floor of their living room what looked like muddy footprints, like from a boot. After this, they put a lock on the kitchen door to the basement, and when they would hear the footsteps come up the stairs and try to open the door, they would hear pounding on the door. Shortly after this, the kids would be affected during the day after school. One day, the daughter, just recently turned 12, tried to get into her bedroom, and the door was closed and she couldn't open it, as if someone was holding it shut. And after several tries, it flew open. One night, Rosa was watching television and heard what sounded like a dog barking in the kitchen. When she went in to investigate, she didn't see anything, but she heard scratching on the door. She still didn't see anything when she finally opened it. The boys, especially the 8-year-old and the boy that recently turned 10, would see a young boy around their age, and he would talk and play with them, especially in the closet. But they were scared when they would see an elderly lady, like walking death, with red eyes, usually seen in the backyard. There seemed to be mechanical difficulties, such as the TV getting messed up, static on cell phones interrupting calls, the engine lights on their cars turning on and off, thermostat settings getting changed, things being hidden, and other such annoyances. Occasionally, they would see the sticks that adjust the Venetian blinds rock back and forth, move from one window to the next. During the winter, the porch was filled with horseflies, and later, some 2 buckets of dirt from underneath the stairs had to be swept up. Soon, the children seemed to be affected physically by becoming sick with vomiting, diarrhea, and fever, with a lot of bleeding around the mouth and nose that would be left on their pillowcases, and the mother had 3 different kidney ailments back to back. In early March, things would be ratcheted up to an unbearable level, forcing the family to leave the house before Easter. That weekend, there was a family get-together at the house. The daughter was sitting on the couch when something pulled her off of it. One of the little boys was in the bathroom, and something threw him into the middle of the room. He complained that something was pulling on his limbs and genitals, and then they saw his stomach go in and out. Next, a name that is marked out was picked up and thrown into the freezer that is in the living room next to the kitchen door. Afterwards, the kids become sleepy and go to bed. The daughter is then awakened by something that is pulling her off of the bed. Family members and friends begin leaving, and some complain that something has followed them, giving them a heavy feeling or a headache that may have taken a couple of weeks to finally dissipate. No one wants to come to the house anymore. Rosa tries to contact her mother Ruth over the phone about what has occurred, which takes several tries due to the bad connections, static, one can hear the other while the other can't, except for cursing, which both could hear. When Ruth tried to call back, 10 zeros appeared on Rosa's phone, which left a garbled message. Eventually, they were able to communicate to the point that Ruth would talk to her neighbor, who belongs to a church that deals with deliverance more than their Baptist church, which was reluctant to get involved in such a way. Early that week, Ruth brought in an evangelist to pray over the kids. When she went into the basement, she felt a lot of activity that was confusing and felt that LaToya was the one being attacked and would attack others through her, and that she would need an exorcism. She was so overwhelmed that she had to leave the house, but she did suggest anointing all of the doors and windows with oil, go through the house with bleach and sage incense, sprinkle salt throughout the basement, and she also set up a small altar in the basement with an open Bible and a candle and incense burner. This did seem to work for 3 days. Then they discovered that the statue of the Holy Family that was placed on the altar had been thrown across the room, breaking off the top part. The kids now seemed to be affected outside of the home, where the crazy behavior would jump from one child to the other as they would get into the car. One would run to the car and start kicking it, and when restrained, the other would be thrown to the grass. Then one would start cussing or saying that it is time to kill or do some sort of demonic chant, where one would stop and the other would pick up where the other left off. Once inside of the car, one would be rolling his head and then stop, and the other would start banging his head on the armrest and then stop. And then the crazy demonic talk would start moving from one to the other. When the entities leave, they fall asleep. The last straw was when they witnessed a Febreze bottle levitating and moving back and forth in the living room before being thrown into LaToya's bedroom that sounded like an explosion which knocked the lamp to the ground, breaking it. When LaToya went into the bedroom to investigate, she saw a large, dark shadow figure at the closet. With that, the family quickly got some clothes and went to a hotel, but the entity seemed to follow them there. They eventually went to stay at LaToya's brother's house, refusing to go back to their house, especially at night, but the entity seemed to follow them there, though it would be more active once outside of the home. When it was time to go back to school, the kids were so affected that they stopped going to school, which got the authorities involved. She was taking the kids to the doctors when they were under a severe attack, where one would act crazy and then fall asleep and then go to the next. When the doctor witnessed this, he told her to take the kids to the hospital to run a series of tests, which she would do the next day. The infamous incident occurred. The way it is described was that Rosa was holding the son by his hands while he was growling back at her, and she was trying to coax him back and saying, "You are not blank. Blank, come back." The children's names are blacked out in the letter since they were under the age of 18. So Rosa was walking him back up against the wall when he continued to walk backwards up the wall until her hands were over her head, and he immediately flipped over her head to land on the other side where she never let go or got twisted up. The psychologist and the social worker from Child Protective Services left the room to eventually get the security, which got the police involved as well. Rosa interrupted the interview, pointing to the bathroom light that was flickering and making an electric type of noise. I then got up to take a closer look, and it stopped the moment I got to the door. I returned back to the couch to continue the interview when the flickering started up again, and again I got up to investigate, and again it stopped just as I got to the door. I returned and mentioned that it must be scared of me when it started up again, and this time it continued even after I entered the room to take a look. I then went back to get my crucifix, and it still continued even after I touched the light fixture with it. I then ignored it to continue the interview. Soon we were interrupted again when Rosa pointed to the Venetian blinds in the kitchen, and the stick that opens them was rocking back and forth about a fourth of an inch. When I was looking at the other blinds, I noticed the one in LaToya's bedroom had what seemed to be a couple of ounces of water poured down the middle of them. I pointed that out to them, and she mentioned that it was oil, and that she made the sign of the cross on all of the windows, doors, and blinds about a month ago, where it had dried. I felt it, and it was wet and oily. I didn't remember seeing it before when I blessed the room. I then heard the furnace kick on and went to look at the blinds. And in the kitchen, you can see the effect that the vent had underneath, moving the tags at the end of the cords that opened them. When I pointed that out to them, they mentioned that this is the only place below a window where there is a vent, where they mainly run along the wall in the middle of the house. I also don't remember seeing any of the tags move. When the furnace kicked off, the tags stopped moving, but the stick continued rocking from one window to the next, while the tags remained, still ruling out the cause of being air currents of any sort. When I tried to resume the interview again, we were interrupted by Rosa pointing to the floor to what seemed to be wet footprints throughout the living room and concentrating around the chair LaToya was sitting in. I felt them and they were wet, and when I tried to smear them with my foot, I was able to. Even though I sprinkled the floor with holy water as I went through the house, you would almost have to walk through a puddle to reproduce what we were seeing, and I don't recall seeing that before. Soon, LaToya began complaining about having a headache. I got my crucifix and placed it upon her head, and she began to quiver and convulse. I immediately took it off, since I was only prepared to conduct an investigation and didn't want to go any further. She then said that she was freezing and went into her bedroom to get a blanket, and then she threw it off, saying that she was then burning up. I was surprised, since I only heard stories of how it was affecting the children. I asked if it affected Rosa also, and she said that it never really affected her. LaToya was then becoming lightheaded and finding it difficult to concentrate and talk. I then looked at my watch and was surprised to see that it was 10:30 p.m. She could call me later that week and we could finish talking. I also gave them permission to give my phone number to other witnesses and they could call me. I then gave her and her mother a blessing as requested and left the house with them. The next day, Rosa called me to say that LaToya was sick as a dog and that she was sleeping in the same room when they woke up to something moving the covers of their feet. LaToya mentioned that her brother is moving to Indianapolis and that there is another place available there with the same landlord. I told her that I would be willing to go out there and bless her new home, since that could avoid going through all the hassle of procuring an exorcism. That Tuesday, I got a call from her friend, Blank, who was present at the March 10th get-together, seeing the daughter mysteriously be pulled off the couch and complaining about being pulled off the bed. After he left the house, he had a headache that lasted about 2 weeks and will never go back to that house again. That same day, I got a call from her brother, who confirmed the same event. When they were staying at his house, he witnessed the kids acting strange, like he never saw them before, doing demonic chants involving numbers where one would pick up where the other left off, and being thrown around and flipped by unseen forces, slamming their heads against the car, and having to be restrained once in the car, and then fall asleep immediately. Friday afternoon, I got a call from the Lake County police detective handling the case. He told me that they were examining the house that past Wednesday during the middle of the day, and we exchanged experiences. He said that the Gary police officer, Charles Austin, was experiencing strange phenomena on voice and the static until the battery went dead suddenly, even though it was fully charged that morning. He mentioned that he took a lot of pictures and voice recordings, and that he brought a videotape recorder that didn't work since his battery was dead despite being fully charged when he left. He had to use his phone to video record the visit. He was interested in contacting me. On Wednesday, May 2nd, Blank of the Hammond Police Department called that Blank was consulting with him as the former local expert on crimes involving the occult with the present one. He said that he would send me his report along with the DVD of the investigation of the house if that would help my report to the bishop, which I said would indeed. He asked me if I saw the photographs taken by Blank, and I said that I hadn't, and he told me there was one that I needed to look at and that he would contact Blank to send that to me. He did call and sent me the photograph by email, which looked like a white face underneath the stairs to the right, and perhaps a darker greenish face in the middle. He later reviewed his audio recording while he was taking those pictures in the basement, and after he mentioned that noises would be heard in the basement it picks up someone whispering, "Hey." I mentioned that I was told that the youngest boy liked to play and talk to an unseen boy around his age. He mentioned that he had found it strange that the poured cement floor appeared to be cut underneath the stairs and that there was dirt. He was going to procure a dog. He was going to ask the family and the landlord if you could dig underneath and if I wanted to be there. I told him if it wasn't a crime scene, I would like to see if anything was buried there and pour blessed salt all over that area. They were also going to check if there was any unsolved crimes, missing persons involving children in the area, and the history of who owned the home and lived in the house. On Saturday, May 5th, I received the promised police report. In looking at the DVD, there was no trace of footprints or of the oil that I saw on the blinds. On Monday, May 7th, I drove to Indy to bless the apartment before they would move in that Friday. On Wednesday, May 9th, Blank called that they had procured a dog. However, not a cadaver dog, since there is only one with the Chicago Police Department used for looking over a wide area. They said that they would revisit the house the next evening. In their research, they discovered that the house was built in 1926, and a newlywed white couple moved in and lived there all their life. After she died, it was sold and the new owners never lived there, but would rent it out to various tenants. The present owner bought the house in 2004 and rented it out to various tenants. On the block, there was one murder, a domestic dispute that was solved. The next day, when the house was revisited, I was there. There was no reaction by the dog. The police began digging slowly, and at 2 feet deep, many disturbing things began to turn up, beginning with a fingernail, then a pair of woman's underwear, a heavy metal object that seemed to be there a long time and was thought to be the weight that would hold down a drapery cord. There were hair beads, the top of various candy bar wrappers, a part of socks with the bottoms below the ankles cut off, a strange oval red lid from a tea kettle perhaps, and what we thought was a bone turned out to be a plastic broken piece from perhaps a shoehorn. After about 3 feet deep, you can see a pristine layer of sand indicating that no digging went any deeper. That ruled out a possible crime scene. The hole was filled in with its contents, and I poured blessed salt all over it. A possibility that back in the 30s, the couple's son may have accidentally been killed when he was playing around by swinging the drapery cord, when he was conked over the head by the 10-pound weight. The grieving mother may have turned to the occult to conjure up her son with having her husband's involvement, who liked the energy boost from candy bars, while burying the personal items surrounding the death. If this worked once, perhaps it was tried other times with people close to her like her mother. If further research turns up some names that can be verified, it may be worthwhile to have a mass said for each to move on and enter the light of Christ's redeeming love. Unfortunately, when LaToya entered the house for the first time since my first interview with her, her headache remained. Oil seemed to condense and drip onto the steps from the crosses she made above. It also appeared all over the blinds in her bedroom. The police officers wiped down the blinds and closed and sealed the door for half an hour, and when opened again, more oil appeared. Last Tuesday, May 15th, Rosa called and said that LaToya was getting worse. When I talked to her, she was having nightly dreams of Blank raping and intimidating her, which seems to be a new phase in her experience. I told her that I would be wrapping up my report and try to see the bishop as soon as I can. Submitted to the Most Reverend Dale J. Melschick, Bishop of Gary, on this Monday, the 21st day of May, 2012, signed by Reverend Michael L. Maganot, Pastor of St. Stephen, Martyr Parish, Maryville, Indiana. On the bottom of this letter, it says the permission was granted by phone at 3:30 p.m., Wednesday, May 30th, 2012. Father Michael performed not one, not two, but three exorcisms. Twice he spoke the exorcisms in English and one more in Latin. He performed one exorcism on LaToya. Father Michael said, quote, "I think there was a curse placed on the mother, that she was the focus, possibly by an ex-boyfriend or his wife, and that combined with some tragedy and perhaps occult practices that had taken place in that house before and that had opened a portal." Rosa said she went down to the basement by herself one day and started to clean when she went into a coughing fit and couldn't breathe. She started praying and she said whatever it was did not like it when the family prayed. Another time in the basement, LaToya and one of her sons were in the cellar when the boy felt something stabbing him in the stomach repeatedly. Rosa said that the more the little boy would read from the Bible, the more the supernatural force would stab him and punch him. Suddenly, something flew across the room and caused a huge bang. Rosa went to see what it was, and she said it was a small Holy Family ornament. The landlord of the home, Charles Reed, said he had not had any experiences in the house that were frightening or paranormal. Also, others who had rented the home before the Ammons family said that they had never had anything paranormal or chilling happen to them in the home. Coincidence, or maybe not, the family was behind on the lease payments, and the blame for that was always being shifted to the paranormal events that were going on inside the home. Rosa claimed that LaToya's daughter had told her that the evil in the home was getting more powerful, and she witnessed a dreadful, menacing, black monster appear in her room. She was so terrified that she would not say much more after that. The straw that broke the camel's back after this whole year of things happening was when the Ammons family were sitting around watching television and that bottle of Febreze soared into the air and was launched into LaToya's room, shattering a lamp, and right afterwards they saw a shadow of a man. And this was all in Father Maginot's letter. That is when they finally left the house and got the hotel and they never went back. LaToya and her family moved in 2012 to Indianapolis. The people who occupied the home after the Ammons family did not encounter anything supernatural. Ever since the move, the Ammons family have never experienced anything they said they did at the home in Gary, Indiana. Could this whole family be lying? Or was this truly a unique experience that only they had in the home, and it just went away? The landlord of the home tends to think that the Ammons family were simply not truthful about any of it. LaToya said it was obviously demons, not just random spirits. She said there is a clear difference. LaToya said that she knows for a fact it was infested with demons, and she spoke to a clairvoyant friend of hers in New York, who explained to her what was going on inside of the house. Her friend also told her that things would only get worse, and that is what happened. LaToya said, quote, "He told me the house was infested with demons and to get my children out of there, and if I knew what I was up against, I would run and drop everything." The clairvoyant said that there were hundreds of demons in the basement. He instructed her to anoint the house with oil, then scatter salt all around the floor to seal all of the portals that malevolent spirits could travel through. Rosa claims that at one time she saw a nasty entity trying to come out of the 7-year-old. This allegedly happened in front of the family physician, Dr. Jeffrey. Whatever it was, she said it was trying to come out of the boy's body. She said, quote, "His head was turning, his eyes rolled back, his mouth went crazy, he started talking in tongues. Then it threw my grandson completely across the room." Rosa said that this is when the nurse who saw this happen would not come back into the room, and Dr. Jeffrey called the police and the ambulance. The two little boys fainted before the ambulance got there. This is the same time that Rosa said her grandson was making gurgling noises and growling, then walked backwards up the wall and glided upwards, walking backwards right above her head as she held his hands and tried to guide him back down the wall. The little boy never remembered anything, but the incident was seen by nurses, social workers, and paramedics, allegedly. It's reported that this event was recorded in all of their official statements. In 2014, LaToya's mother, Rosa, gave Mail Online a tour of the home. She took them downstairs to the basement, where it was lit by hanging naked bulbs, bare walls, and a concrete floor. It was described as looking abandoned, and there was only a small table covered in a cloth, an open Bible on top of it, as well as an unlit candle. Salt was sprinkled on the floor. It was a desperate effort to purge the home of evil entities. In an interview in 2014, Father Michael Magonot said that he thinks a lot of the triggers came from LaToya's ex-boyfriend. This man was not the one who was the father of the children. He said each time that he would ask her about this certain man, LaToya would start to complain of more powerful symptoms of the possession: fever, cold, headaches, nausea, and convulsions. He said that almost 4 hours went by when she was going through one of these moments, and he took his crucifix and put it to her forehead when she began convulsing more. He said he thought the demons were just with the kids, but now he could see that they were with her as well. She was the source. He said that it jumped from her, and they jumped from child to child. They would pick up each other's chants, or convulse in turn, acting crazy, or growl in turn, but they were with her. As Father Michael Magonot looked back on the exorcisms that he did, he said that he carried out the first exorcism in English, and there was no incident. It was like it had already gone, but they do say they play possum. Father Michael Magonot gave LaToya a crucifix and a rosary. As she left the church, the rosary ripped into 5 pieces. He said, quote, "I don't think we're done here." Later, LaToya reported to the priest that the corpus, the figure of Christ on the crucifix he had given her, had similarly been torn off. Father Magonot said, rocking to and fro in his easy chair, that he had to figure out how to provoke the demons and drive them out. LaToya had researched names and felt that 2 belonged to her demons. Father Michael will not repeat either of these names. One is a biblical name and the other is not, and he does not want to risk calling them. He explained, quote, "It's a very personal thing. Once you have their name, it's as though you have them caught. They like to work in mystery and darkness. Once you shine a light, you show their limitations, and they don't like that." He talked about being attacked after he performed the second exorcism. When Father Michael was out riding his bike, several times he almost got into accidents, and unexplainably, he was thrown from the seat of his bike. He said that he looked and saw that the seat of his bike was completely twisted, but it made no sense because it was absolutely tight and he had to really pound it to straighten it out. He said he had no doubt that he had been attacked. He said he was being warned. The response to the second exorcism was more violent. Father Magonot explained that the exorcism is a ritual repeated over and over, with the priest narrowing in on the demon and its triggers. He said that you try to protect yourself as much as you can. You go to confession, because if there are unconfessed sins, it will use that. It will use anything possible to deflect or distract or scare you. He said you think you're torturing the person, but you're not. You're torturing the demon. The final exorcism was in Latin, praising God and condemning the demon. The parts that were praising God, there was no reaction from LaToya. Father Magonot recalled that the parts condemning the demons is when she started convulsing, which was interesting to him as she doesn't know Latin. LaToya said that she felt herself being pulled up as if to levitate, but Father Magonot saw no sign of that. After a third exorcism, Latoya fell asleep. He gave her the now mended rosary, and she took it home with her. Father Magonot said he's never heard from her again. He said that he was anticipating more. He was anticipating another, at least, but it turned out the game was over. After the final exorcism, Father Magonot visited the house and blessed it with what he referred to as a more serious blessing. He said that that involved incense, salt, and holy water. There were already new tenants in place, and they had reported no problems since the priest had sealed the portal with salt and blessings following an earlier investigation. But he said that he told the landlord, Charles Reed, "If we don't deal with this now, properly, this will not go away. This will close the portal and seal it." This might explain why there was no activity in the home afterwards. In 2014, Zach Bagans of the hit Travel Channel TV show Ghost Adventures bought the house on 3860 Carolina Street. He paid $35,000 for it. In January of 2016, Zach had the home torn down. This was after he taped a documentary in the home called Demon House. It was made available on March 16, 2018. Zach Bagans spent 2 years on this documentary. After he tore down the house, it's rumored that Zach took some of the remains of the house and locked them in a container and put them in a secret location. Zach told the Indy Star, quote, "Something was inside that house that had the ability to do things that I have never seen before. Things that others carrying the highest forms of credibility couldn't explain either. There was something there that was very dark, yet highly intelligent and powerful." Steve Barton of Dread Central said it was one of the single most compelling documentaries on the existence of the supernatural that he had ever witnessed. On the opposite side of the spectrum, Noel Murray, a Los Angeles Times reviewer, said the documentary was, quote, hooey. Kenny Biddle, an investigator who is unconvinced of paranormal activity in general, said the documentary is more so described as a pseudo-documentary. He said it is filmed how a documentary would be, but the events being depicted are just not real. Captain Austin said, quote, "It shook me. Everything to do with this, it shook me. This was a situation that was so out of my normal habitat. Did it shake me? Yes, to a certain degree it did. You tell me, what do you think happened?" So I have the same question for all of you. What do you think happened? Thank you for listening to today's episode. I want to give a quick thank you to my patrons at patreon.com/reverietruecrime. Thank you Jamie, A.A. Sapper, Buffy, Angel, Iris, Ashley, Jimmy, Corey, Joe, Casey, Shannon, Matt, Ian, Brandy, Chelsea, Maggie, Liz, Shayna, Trevor, Kara, Melissa, Lorraine, and Denise. Thank you all so much for supporting me and the podcast however you choose to. Please take care and stay safe out there. I love you.